In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
You better believe the Knicks got all that takes. We're shooting three-pointers, and we're running fast breaks. And if your defense makes a mistake, then bam, you ain't dunks in your face. This is a team you don't want to miss. We are New York. We are the New York Knicks. Go, New York. Go, New York. Go.
From the moment he entered the NBA, Patrick Ewing has been hailed as the franchise. And he's never backed down from the pressure that the role of savior can bring.
All rise, and welcome to another episode of Basketball Court, the only courtroom in the nation where the topic is all basketball all the time. Here in this courtroom, we relitigate the great disputes of NBA history. As I'm fond of saying, I'm Judge Peter Andrews here in the District Court for the District of Basketball. As I'm fond of saying, there are many basketball courts in this country. There are many courts in this country, but there's only one basketball court. It's a pretty bad tagline, but it's the best we've got. Well, we're joined. We're joined, as always, by our co-counsel, Miles Johnson.
Hey, everybody, how you doing?
And Sam Tidings.
Happy to be here, as always.
Now, in the last episode, neither of them actually won, as our guest guest attorney, Robert Moen, came in and took the crown. We'll see if they can snatch it back this week, as they'll be going head-to-head. With the help of our special guest judge, we're really excited to have on the show. He's a writer for Bleacher Report and Slam Magazine. He's also a fan of the New York Knicks. And that's Yaron Weitzman. Yaron, welcome to Basketball Court.
Hey guys, thanks. Happy to be here.
And Yaron will be our special guest judge this week as we delve into, we go a little bit further back in time than we normally do on the show, which is a very, very modern focus. We're going to talk about a pivotal moment in New York City basketball history, taking you back to the 1995 playoffs.
And me, this was God's doing, and this time I won't finger roll Pat Ewing.
The starch comes to the corner, inbounds to Ewing, down to three, down to two, Ewing, yes! And they are celebrating here at Madison Square Garden. It was a terrific run for the Indiana Pacers.
That's right, Patrick Ewing missed a very crucial layup. And the result was devastating for the New York Knicks and for their fans. And just to set the context, I want to ask Yaron to lead off. What do you remember about this play from Patrick Ewing?
We could say heartbreak. Is that a good place to start? I mean, just the idea, the pure shock that he actually missed it. It's like the easiest shot. It sounds like cliche. So easy. I mean, come back from 3-1 and have that shot. And he looked off Derek Harper. He drove down to the lane, and you kind of assume that there's like you see the victory right ahead, and just pure shock and heartbreak when he misses.
Well, shock and heartbreak is the specialty here on Basketball Court, but let's talk about a different universe. Let's say that layup actually went in. I wonder how the world would be different today. I mean, the world as a whole probably not that different, but you know, you never know. These things sometimes spiral out in unpredictable ways. So we'll get right to it. Let's start with Sam this week. Sam, you got 15 minutes to talk through your alternate history of the NBA. Yaron, feel free to interrupt and ask questions at any time. The more snarky they are, the more snarky they are, the better. So, Sam, fire when ready.
I watched plenty of Law and Order, so I'm all prepared. Don't worry, guys.
this is going to be awesome.
All right, Sam, you're up. As it pleases the court, we are going to posit that the layup goes in. The Knicks end up winning the game in overtime, having come back from 3-1 down in the series and coming back from 7 points down in the final few minutes of Game 7 itself. They beat the Pacers in overtime to advance to the conference finals, where we get this amazing Shaq versus Ewing matchup. Young, skinny Shaq still dominant against Ewing. The Knicks don't have home court advantage, but they find a way to win the series in six, thus putting them into the NBA Finals for the second straight year against the Houston Rockets. But this time, the Knicks have home court advantage. But this being the Knicks, they do find a way to blow it, They lose the series in six games to Houston, and they have to watch David Stern hand Hakeem Olajuwon the trophy on the garden floor. But there are still some very long-range effects coming from the Knicks winning that game and making it to the 95 finals. First of all, the biggest blow for the Knicks that offseason was, of course, Pat Riley faxing his resignation letter to Dave Chekits and bolting to the greener pastures of South Beach to start what would become the Miami Heat under his legacy. But the big negotiating issue that Riley had with the Knicks at the time was that they wouldn't give him control over player personnel and they wouldn't give him any stake in ownership. But after taking the team to back-to-back finals, competitive finals, the team bends in and they give Riley a 10-year, $45 million deal to serve as the coach, the GM, and the president of player personnel.
How much hair gel do they give him?
I think he has to provide his own still. I don't know if that's in the contract, but looking forward a year, since I'm not going to have, even under Riley, the Knicks knocking off the 96 Bulls, but we go into this crazy summer of 96, which is one of the first real summers like this past NBA offseason where there was a cap spike and all these teams had space and all these incredible future Hall of Famers were hitting the market. Like Shaq, of course, in reality, bolted from Orlando to go to the Lakers. But at this point, the Knicks have about $12 million in cap room in reality. And with Riley in charge, they have one of the few GMs who actually knows how to navigate this new collective bargaining agreement. I mean, if you remember in reality in Miami, he signed so many guys in not so legal ways that they had to void their contract with Juwan Howard because they said it violated the salary cap. I'm not going to have him doing anything that illegal in New York, but I am going to have him pulling off the coup of the offseason, which is signing Reggie Miller away from the Pacers and giving him a 4-year, $40 million deal, which means that Reggie joins the team he could never get past for three straight seasons in the NBA playoffs, and he joins the hated Knicks, making him public enemy number one in Indiana and making the Knicks sort of the only real challenger to the Bulls in the East, with Indiana losing Reggie and Orlando losing Shaq.
So wait, is that instead of Allen Houston?
That's instead of Allen Houston and Chris Childs, I believe.
Chris Childs. Okay, so Reggie Miller is in a Knicks uniform.
Reggie Miller is a Knick, and it's weird for everyone, but it ends up working out.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good look? Do you think that's a good look for Reggie, the blue and orange?
I was trying to come up with a Photoshop for it earlier, and it did look kind of bizarre from an aesthetic level. But I think some immediate ramifications for that is obviously Reggie Miller had his issues with Spike, which he has to settle up in this timeline. But in terms of on-the-court stuff, that season in reality, the Knicks sign Allen Houston, and John Starks agrees to back him up and mentor him, and Starks ended up winning Sixth Man of the Year. I can't really see John Starks as benevolent as he is doing that for someone like Reggie, who he feuded with so much when they were on other ends of the court for all those playoff series. So the Knicks have to trade Starks and they have to trade Anthony Mason because Riley was getting sick of him when he was still the coach in reality, and they ended up trading him that offseason anyway. But all this coming together, along with Shaq going to the Lakers and Gary Payton nearly leaving Seattle for the Knicks, or maybe for the Lakers, or nearly leaving Seattle in general, it causes all these small market owners to start panicking about, you know, what can we do to really just keep the big market teams from just blowing us out of the water financially, which is something to think about later. Because the Knicks lose to the Bulls in 97, and everything looks lost for the whole Miller-Ewing era when Ewing gets hurts his wrist dunking the ball in 98. But he does come back for the playoffs. He leads the Knicks to finally knock out the Bulls, who were exhausted at the end of that run, denying Jordan his second three-peat.
So, Sam,
yes,
you're saying
yes.
That you are saying that the Ewing theory is actually not the Ewing theory doesn't exist in your timeline here, as I understand it.
I have issues with the Ewing theory in general. I don't know how much we delve into that on the podcast, but also in this timeline, the Ewing theory is sort of buoyed by the fact that they have, you know, another MVP candidate in Reggie Miller to really pick up the slack if Ewing isn't on the floor. And in that 98 season where Ewing got hurt and he didn't come back until the second round of the playoffs when the Knicks were already down and ended up losing that series, now you have him coming back to rejoin a team with Oakley and Miller and, you know, a really solid filled out roster. instead of him just sort of having to act as the savior. But they finally do get past the Bulls in the conference finals. They take on the Utah Jazz, and they get a big win. They stun the Jazz, win the series in six, and it gives the Garden the first title in 25 years and sort of cements Ewing's legacy as this legend who, you know, everyone remembers Dave DeBuscher holding up his jersey on the lottery, the potentially rigged lottery. And the Knicks end up going back to the finals the next 2 years. They don't win either one, but it does convince them to hold off on a Ewing trade, so Knicks fans are spared seeing Patrick Ewing in a Seattle Supersonics uniform. So he retires a Knick, and a heroic Knick at that.
So Reggie Miller gets the Knicks past Jordan, essentially. That's your argument?
That is essentially – it's a very weird world that we're living in, but yes, that's okay. The crux of the argument. A Reggie and Ewing lineup is enough to get the Knicks past the Bulls. I mean, in reality, that season, 98, was that series where Reggie hit a couple game winners, and they had the lead in Game 7 at the United Center. So it's definitely, you know, it was possible the Pacers could have won that series in, you know, the actual world, I think, with Ewing.
Yeah, I buy that. I buy that.
There we go.
Yeah, I can see that. There's that lore around Jordan, but those Pacers teams and the Knicks teams gave Jordan's Bulls a run back then. So I can see combining Miller and Ewing, how that could be.
So let's get into sort of the bigger picture stuff. Everyone's legacies and other things like that. Ewing is just an absolute legend in New York City, of course, and then, you know, league-wide. He was this top pick with all the hype, and he lives up to it. Ends up taking the Knicks to five finals. Even though he only wins one, he wins it in a manner that's basically copying what Willis Reed did, you know, except for the dramatic walkout in a Game 7. And also, he's hailed for helping to convince Reggie Miller to team up with him and help get the Knicks over the hump to win a title, sort of how, you know, even when Wade took a back seat in Miami after bringing LeBron in, everyone still credited him with pulling the big three together. Reggie, on the other hand, goes down as just one of the league's biggest villains in the history of the NBA. And he's one of the first real stars to bolt on a small market for big money and free agency along with Shaq that same summer. He's already hated by players and some fans for how much he trash talks. And his decision to join the Knicks is sort of just a, you know, middle finger to all the small market teams and owners. He's hated in Indiana for bailing on them, and he's hated everywhere else just for going to New York because no one really likes New York outside of New York. Pat Riley, on the other hand, becomes...
Wait, Paul, I have a question on Reggie Miller. Does this kill his TV career? Because that would be an added bonus if it does.
I can't go that far. I think, unfortunately, it probably helps his TV career since he gets, you know, probably an extra 7 or so years of exposure playing in New York as opposed to playing his whole career out in Indiana. So it probably makes him a more valued commodity once he retires to go to the TV side. So I unfortunately can't bend the will of time that much.
Okay.
So let's get back to Riley, because once he went to Miami, in reality, he started signing all the free agents. And then, you know, that was sort of his way to rebuild the team, even when they tanked and got Wade and built up back with free agency and trading for Shaq and then building it back up with LeBron and Bosch. So he sort of ends up being able to do that, but in New York, and it's because he has this unprecedented power as the GM and the president of player personnel. And it's also important because he gets into the fold in the summer of 95, which is 4 years before James Dolan takes over for his father as the executive chairman of MSG and starts, you know, doing James Dolan things to the Knicks. So Riley has an upper hand because he has a title. He's taken them to a few other titles, and no one really is going to side with Dolan over Riley in the court of public opinion. So he's basically able to have free reign. He's able to serve out his entire 10-year contract as a coach. And then he steps back to the front office to let Jeff Van Gundy, who had a couple of failed coaching stints in between, leaving the Knicks as an assistant and coming back to them, to take over and fill out Riley's legacy. And the other real big change from this timeline is player movement. And it's something that's been talked about a lot in the NBA recently, of course, with LeBron leaving Cleveland and everything that stemmed from that, and Kevin Durant doing what he did last offseason, and now this new rule in the CBA that's allowing teams to offer, you know, 5 years, $200 million contracts and everything like that. But that really started in 2010. Imagine if it started, you know, going back to 96 and the 99 CBA, which was bad enough for the players and how it took away max salaries and crunched the salary cap a little bit. But you start seeing incentives put in there to incentivize players to stay with their original teams through allowing higher raises, higher maxes, more years. This mostly has its desired effect until LeBron just cannot deal with being in Cleveland no matter how much they're offering, and he bails to make a big three, which of course causes a lockout the next season and causes the owners to keep finding ways to incentivize people to stay with their original teams, especially those in small markets. This leads, of course, to the summer of 2015, where Kevin Durant...
And do we avoid the 99 lockout?
No, there's no avoiding the 99 lockout.
Okay.
it's a firm rule in basketball court.
Understood. Okay.
So we go all the way forward from the missed layup in 95 to the summer of 2015, 20 years later, where Kevin Durant, coming off missing, you know, 3/4 of the season with a broken foot, now all of a sudden is incentivized to sign an 8-year extension, max extension, to stay with the Thunder.
You sure you don't want to make a 16-year open market extension?
It's actually a long contract. It's a lifetime contract. Yeah,
it's 8 years.
No,
just
this is
this like 20.
This is probably the most peak Thunder fanfic in what has been largely a Thunder fanfic podcast so far, is to say the butterfly flaps his wings, Kevin Durant will play for Oklahoma City forever.
Do we have a Thunder fan making our argument here? Is that what is going on?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege in the basketball court.
Well, I will ask, I want to ask, so basically Pat Riley doesn't go to the Heat, so the Heat never really develop in the same way as a super team. How does that affect the rest of the league? You have to account, there are a couple titles that you might have to account for there.
I mean, at some point, yeah. I mean, I think they're still going to be bad enough that they'd be in a position to draft high in 2004, or 2003, so they could get Wade probably, or be high enough to get a big star like that. I don't know if they necessarily team up in Miami. I mean, there's a good chance with Riley in New York and having some rings, and maybe not with Reggie around, but it's very possible that LeBron does end up going to New York. I didn't want to claim that in my brief because I thought I might get yelled at, but
that might be too crazy.
That might be a little too over the top, but if Miami's not the place, I think that LeBron would have gone the best place that gave him a chance to win a title. And if it is true, all the stories about Riley getting LeBron in a conference room and throwing all his rings down on the table like some sort of mafia goon was what ended up convincing LeBron to jump ship, then there's a possibility that if you add a couple of rings from, you know, being in New York and winning titles there, that it might have helped lure LeBron or at least some other free agents in to retool the Knicks under Riley in the early 2010s instead of what they ended up doing.
I have an issue with one of your Riley theories.
I'm all ears.
I think Riley is a... I don't see him spending a decade in New York in the cold weather. I think he's a warm weather guy. I believe he has a house in L.A. that he spends a lot of time in. So I don't know if that means if he stays in New York, he becomes kind of like, well, I don't know where Phil Jackson is in your hypothetical basketball world here, but he becomes a sort of like Phil Jackson, you know, the guy who's there but not always there. I don't know. I don't know how I see that playing out. That's one of the issues I have with this whole hypothetical.
I mean, I think it is. I mean, it could be sort of similar to what he did in Miami, where he was the coach for a while and then handpicked his successor. And then when Stan Van Gundy wasn't working out, he just sort of jumped back in and tried to run things on his own as the coach. I mean, obviously it would make sense for him to take a step back, but I think for him, as long as he was winning, he'd want to have a chance to be on the floor and coach him up himself. I mean, I was surprised as anyone when the Heat started off so slow in 2010 and he didn't jump in and do the same thing to Spoelstra.
Mm-hmm. I have a challenge because I think our judges have been far too gracious and kind to opposing counsel here.
You want them to treat me like a hostile witness?
I would like them to, at the very least, question whether... So are you saying the only difference between the Houston Rockets and the Chicago Bulls and that would have been the Rockets in 95, the Bulls in 98, is Reggie Miller. Like, so the Knicks can't beat Olajuwon and the Rockets, but with the addition of Reggie Miller, they could beat Jordan, Pippen, and the Bulls?
I mean, they're two different teams, and they're players at different stages of their career. I mean, part of it is that the Knicks, I mean, obviously, you saw what happened to them in reality. They were kind of beat up that season, and they took a step back from 94. They didn't even win the division that year. I think they were the 3 seed. And so it wasn't like a really dominant Knicks squad, especially compared to their predecessors. And also, if you remember Rudy Tomjanovic from every single ABC Finals promo of the last 10 years, never underestimate the heart of a champion. And the Rockets were defending champions. And I know the Bulls were two-time defending champions at that time, but I really think that the Knicks adding another elite scorer and a guy who could defend Jordan.
Another
and,
guy that never could beat Jordan. You just have three guys that never could beat times. Jordan on the same team. But they, all right.
I mean, Ewing almost beat Jordan a couple times. I mean, you could argue that if they didn't have that huge fracas with Miami where the whole team got suspended, they could have had a shot to beat them in 97 instead of blowing a big lead. I think Reggie in basically his prime and Ewing sort of towards the end of his prime is a decent enough option to knock off a Chicago team that was really worn down by that point for having played so much the previous few seasons together.
All right, Council, you've gone up to and over your time. Let's let Miles do his brief.
Great, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. So I have Patrick Ewing, of course, taking the extra dribble, because that's what is key here. Pat takes an extra dribble. It's an easy dunk instead of that sort of awkward in-between laying three. He has to try to kiss the finger roll off the back of the rim. Takes the extra dribble. Knicks go on to win an OT. They face Orlando and beat them in the Eastern Conference Finals and advance to the second straight finals in a rematch against the Rockets. Unlike Sam, I have the Knicks, who would have had home court advantage and would have been the second best defensive team in the league that year, winning in 7 games, and Patrick Ewing being named Finals MVP. I have Pat Riley staying on, not nearly as long as Sam does, but for another title run next year. But what that means is that Don Nelson doesn't take over, and as we'll all remember, he ended up getting canned midway through that season for Jeff Van Gundy. But instead, Van Gundy, who at this point is a pretty talented and promising assistant coach who now has a ring under his belt, is lured to Indiana, a team that similarly is defensive-minded, tough-nosed, and would have, I think, flourished under Van Gundy. I, too, skip a year just because I think the 72 and 10 Bulls has to be a sort of mainstay. I don't think anybody would have challenged them. I think that was one of the constants, if you will, the butterfly flapless or butterfly immune teams. But the 96 offseason, so when you skip forward a year, it's really nuts. I don't have the Knicks making that trade for Larry Johnson for Anthony Mason. So I don't have Anthony Mason being shipped off to Charlotte. There's no grandmama in New York. There's no 4-point play, unfortunately, because Larry Johnson stays in Charlotte. Orlando has been bounced out of the playoffs in consecutive years now. They don't re-sign Horace Grant, which frees up money to offer Shaq. And that's important because even though the L.A. trade with Vlade Divac and Kobe Bryant still happens, Shaq and Kobe never meet up because Shaq stays in Orlando. And instead, the Lakers
I have to interrupt. You have Shaq staying in Orlando because there's more money?
Because it's more money, right. They throw more money at him after not needing that money to sign Horace Grant. Shaq, who was already bristled, in real life, I should say, bristled at the fact that Orlando wasn't able to offer him as much money. He goes and bounces to L.A., of course, in real life. I have Orlando offering him much more money, a six-figure salary, which they would have grant in real life again, but I don't have them doing in my alternate timeline, and Shaq stays with the expansion team that perhaps loved him like no other team could.
But he's still starring.
But I do have the Lakers sign. So, yeah, so there's still Kazam. Here's the thing I wanted to really bring up. all of the ancillary Shaq stuff still very much happens. I don't want it to seem as if just because Shaq was in L.A., that is what motivated all of his acting pursuits. There's still Kazam. He still has, later on in life, all of the tough acting, tenactin, foot athletes, foot cream gel commercials. All that stuff still happens. And
General.com?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Still has the ugly shoes.
There's no Kobe, tell me how my ass tastes rap.
But...
I think that's a good thing for the world, though.
I think it's a big loss to the world in Miles' time.
I would agree.
But so instead, I have the Lakers signing Mutombo to anchor sort of their defensive unit because now they're missing a big guy in the middle, not having Shaq. Pacers re-sign Reggie Miller, but they fire head coach Larry Brown, who failed to advance past the Knicks in the semis and back-to-back years. And this is important because later on down the line, of course, in real life, Pat Croce for the Sixers would have lured Larry Brown to the Sixers to coach Allen Iverson. And they had their, of course, historic run to the 2001 finals.
Can I just stop you? Because, Miles, let me just pause for a second and make a bad stand-up comedy observation here. Why do people always say lured? To when they just mean that, you know, they made him a better job offer. Like, it's not like, you know, Pat Croce was like, hey, Larry Brown, like, overhear this free pie, and then, like, a net fell on him, and he became the Sixers head coach. Like, I just want to note, because, you know, I'm a judge, I can say whatever I want, I just want to note.
Are you sure that's little... how coaches get hired?
Well, in the case of Derek Fisher, maybe.
More like, unmarked van with tinted windows, in a sign that points to the van saying free candy. And then that's how
okay,
we get.
Okay.
I mean, that's how I would offer Larry Brown a job.
Yeah. All right, continue.
Okay, so really the biggest effects from this, of course, there's no Shaq and Kobe, which is great for both of them, I guess, interpersonally. There's no Shaq and Kobe beef. They don't end up hating each other's guts, but of course that also, unbeknownst to them in my timeline, means that they never team up to become one of the best 1-2 punches in league history. There, of course, are no off-court squabbles, but Penny Hardaway continues to disintegrate Kobe Bryant and Rick Fox and Karl Malone and whoever other pieces that they sort of piece together in LA is not nearly as potent as it would have been for Shaq and Kobe. So neither of them ascend to the championship level if they would have together in LA. Other unfortunate ancillary effects, we never get the Jeff Van Gundy fight with the Miami Heat, so we never see him desperately clawing onto Alonzo Mourning's leg. That never happens, unfortunately, which I think perhaps even more so than the how does taste Kobe Bryant moment. We never have that. That was one of my favorite fights, I think, up there with the Chris Childs Kobe fight, which actually does still happen. But the Jeff Van Gundy Alonzo Mourning one doesn't. More big winners in this. Patrick Ewing, this is obvious, but Ewing adds a ring sort of to his list of accolades. He is now in the upper echelon of Knicks players, cements him as one of the greatest defenders of his generation. I only have the Knicks winning one ring. I don't have them going, making all these multiple trips to the finals because I think that either Jordan's Bulls or the Pacers, who would have been bolstered by Jeff Van Gundy, and they would have still kept Reggie Miller and that really tough defensive front line with the Davis brothers and I think was that Austin Crozier was on that team too.
Why are we calling the Davis brothers if they're not actually brothers?
I don't know. Why do we do that? Anybody know? Because they're definitely referred to, like, officially as the Davis brothers, right? I didn't just make that up.
I think so. I think you're right. I think it's just laziness, which I will, what's the proper term here?
Yeah.
I will deduct points from you as a judge. As a judge, I will use my power to deduct points from you for being lazy and calling them the Davis brothers.
Well, I just want to be clear that precedent in this court says that we can add or take away points from the two arguments, basically at will. But like Whose Line, the points don't stand for anything. So,
Okay, well, I'm taking away a dozen points then.
Okay, that's fair, I guess.
An unprecedented reprimand.
But I do have
the... Here's a better question. If one Davis brother was white, would we still call them the Davis brothers?
They'd be fraternal. Twins, that's how that works, right?
That's how that works? I don't think that's what I'm getting at, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I deserve the point deduction for just assuming all black people are related. But moving forward...
This is the least cool
I have line. Reggie Miller. Yeah, I mean, look, Sam, you had your time. Reggie Miller and friends have them beating Portland in the 2000 finals. Reggie Miller's named finals MVP, and then I have him retiring the next offseason. I, like Sam, can't spare the rest of the world from Reggie Miller's just horrible career as an announcer. I think that's just one of the things that we as the people have to bear together.
Can I make an objection?
More sort of good news, bad news. Go ahead.
So Reggie gets a ring and then just retires. He's just done 5 years early. He's like, okay, cool. I've done what I need to. My home planet needs me. That's it.
Yes. I'm not quite sure.
I like the implication that Reggie Miller is Poochie, but...
I think the biggest thing that motivates every player, but especially guys like Reggie Miller, who would have stayed with his same team his entire career, is that he wanted the title. He maybe doesn't play those extra 5 years, doesn't add that wear and tear on his body for no reason if he's already reached the promised land. And I think you see him do kind of, well, hopefully, what Tom Brady's going to do and retire on top. More mixed news, though.
Deduction of points. We're mentioning a quarterback in a basketball podcast. So that's.
I thought we were going to get through the whole game without mentioning that atrocity on Sunday. So I'm a little sad myself.
That I think that the atrocity on Sunday should be like the name that, like, you know, they look back at the immaculate reception, the, you know, the catch, whatever. I think the atrocity would be a good way to remember the Super Bowl. But let's continue talking about basketball.
There's no Tyronn Lue moment. This is really important. This is the most important and most salient takeaway from my entire timeline, is that the greatest crossover step over combo that has ever been seen, the one that millions of kids would have replicated on thousands of playgrounds across the country, because there's no Lakers super team, there's no Allen Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue moment. He doesn't sort of live on in poster infamy for years to come. And again, I have Don Nelson coaching the Sixers instead of Larry Brown in this timeline, which I think I have mixed feelings about, good and bad. I don't think he's perhaps the best fit for Iverson, but I do think he's in the keys to the offense and just says have at it in a way that Larry Brown wouldn't have. And I have the Sixers picking up Horace Grant, who you remember would not have been re-signed.
Oh, thank God.
So I have Horace Grant and Iverson kind of has that 1-2 punch. Remember, Dikembe Mutombo's out in L.A. They narrowly defeat the Kings, and what goes down is like this all-time classic 7-game series. Iverson's named finals MVP, goes on and plays a few more years, unlike Reggie Miller, does not retire right afterwards, but that's kind of the pinnacle for Iverson.
So I think this is the first episode of Basketball Court where the Sixers win a title. So well done, Miles. 15 points.
That's got
to
be at least
you.
Worth like 30 points. Nice.
I just said 15.
Okay, that's fine. And sort of the last like ancillary effect I have is like the great thing about Patrick Ewing winning a title is that he like really elevates Jamaica as sort of a national, not necessarily basketball powerhouse, but as a nation of very appreciative and very rabid basketball fans. This does wonders for his popularity in the U.S. In New York, his sneakers, which are horrendously ugly, with the huge tongue that weighs like 6 pounds, the huge basketball on it, that actually... outpaces.
Objection! I am wearing Ewing sneakers right now. Objection! That is a minus.
Are you really wearing
points.
Ewing sneakers right now?
I am. I'm wearing the new Slam Ewing sneakers. So that is a major objection. Huge deduction. I think you might be done.
You really have to ask the judges which shoes they're wearing. Next time we have a guest on, we really have to ask them whose shoes they're wearing before we start dissing people on the podcast.
Yaron, how do your ankles feel? Have you getting a good workout? Because I know
they are fantastic. Shout out to Dave Goldberg and the rest of the guys at Ewing Athletics. I love the shoes. Made it with Slam. You got to get them. They're on sale now, the Slam Ewings.
And I really hope they're
Miles, you walked right into that one. Unbelievable.
I did. This is terrible. I'm getting killed here. But I do have Ewing. Years later is going to lead his delegation in Jamaica out at the 2008 Summer Games. Usain Bolt will don a pair of 1995 Ewing Finals MVP cleats that will, of course, be sold in stores everywhere after Usain Bolt breaks all those records that he did in 2008. Patrick Ewing just kind of becomes the best player to ever come from Jamaica, only player to win a title from Jamaica. And kind of elevates Jamaica as a basketball sort of outlet, and perhaps even leads to scouts in the future making more trips to Kingston looking for basketball talent.
When do we rule? And, we rule now?
I was going to say, I'm... You know, I think we should have one judge speaking for us both. So, Yaron, why don't you? So, what I usually do is I talk through, you know, what are a couple things I liked and didn't like about each one, and then sort of make an ultimate decision as to who the winner is.
Okay, well, this will be pretty easy. Aside from having my shoes insulted and a favorite brand of mine insulted, aside from that, is that Miles who I was just talking to? Was that Miles? I forgot which one.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunate.
Okay, Miles, aside from all that, I'm going to make an objection, and I don't know why, as a judge, I'm objecting. I think lawyers object. I guess I sustain. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But what I'm going to say is I have two issues with your cases. One, the idea of Shaq not going to L.A. Don't see it not happening. More importantly, though, your, we'll call it alternate timeline, whatever you want to call it, it robbed us of so much fun. You took away Shaq and Kobe, and you took away the Tyronn Lue moment, and you took away, I don't know, what are the other moments you took away? You took a lot away. I know you said you saved Kazam, but that's not enough. So, that was my, the Shaq not going to LA part was my biggest issue. To me, it comes down to Shaq not going to LA, which is, I guess, more likely, less likely, Shaq not leaving for LA, or a Reggie Miller and Ewing tandem beating the Bulls. And I actually think the Reggie Miller-Ewing tandem beating the Bulls is not as crazy as some might think. So that is where I come down on. And again, you insulted my shoes.
So does that mean that you've...
Like I win this week.
Other than that, though, you did a great job arguing.
Well, thank you.
So does that mean that, Yaron, you're giving the title to Sam?
Yes, Sam.
I cannot thank you enough. This is a big moment for me on the podcast.
And Miles, you know how they discuss, like, you know how after Sunday night football game, like, is it like the Patriots won or the Falcons choked? We can have the same conversation for this argument between you and Sam.
Wow. Jesus. This is harsh.
We need a basketball court first take spinoff podcast now. We got to get three other people debating on whether Miles blew it or whether I had good arguments.
Exactly.
I think what this really shows is that as a judge, I've been way too nice to you two. And I feel like I haven't been that nice, but like, man, we have Yaron come in and he just really cut you down to size. And I appreciate that greatly.
You don't wear
greatly.
Basketball shoes, do you? I feel
this
like
is an Antonin Scalia.
We're a lot safer here. Criticizing people when you're the only judge, because I don't have to worry about you being like, well, actually, I'm wearing Steph Curry signature Under Armour right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
That's true. The only ones I wear are Curry Lowe's, so not a problem for me. All right. I think that's a good point to leave it. It's been another great episode of Basketball Court. I want to thank both of our litigants for coming in, but especially, riding the circuits, are our esteemed guest judges. Yaron, why don't you, well, first, thanks for coming on the show. Hope you had a good time.
Thank you so much,
Doug. And can you just tell our many, many listeners where they can find your stuff on the internet?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, Yaron, Yaron Weitzman, Weitzman. Most of my stuff there, Bleach Report, Slam Magazine. I'll cover most of it. Some other places occasionally here and there, but Bleach Report and Slam Magazine cover most of my work.
Well, that's great. Well, we really appreciate coming on the show, and I think Sam in particular really happy with the way that this sure. this turned out.
Every week.
All right, and so with that, make sure that if you're listening, you check out our show on Twitter at B-Ball Court Pod. You can find us on Facebook. It's Basketball Court Podcast. We have, most podcasts will be like, we'll have another show next Monday, but this show isn't like that. This is our irregularity is our greatest strength, and so look for another episode of Basketball Court at some point in the future, because the future is where we will spend the rest of our lives. So on behalf of Miles Johnson and our defending champion Sam Tidings, I'm Judge Peter Andrews. Court's adjourned.